This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msvnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
This is a Roundtable Rewind with LT, Dunaway, and Brown.
It was a disaster on the basketball court last night that we want to start off with in the battle between Kansas State and Kansas. And it's got implications here locally because both teams involved in that Big 12 SEC Challenge coming up this weekend, specifically Kansas State coming to Tuscaloosa to play Alabama at Coleman Coliseum. A brawl at the very end of the game, a dunk and block situation and a blowout. And for the contest to be ending and Silvio D'Souza to stand over the Kansas State player who tried to block the dunk, and then for a melee to break out that was almost like the disaster in the palace. This was a scary scene because at one point, Silvio D'Souza of Kansas had a chair wrestling style over the head, and then was the chair was taken away from him.
Yeah, the Sunflower Sundown, our showdown, did not end the way that most people would like this. You know, you wonder what the repercussions from the Big 12 are going to be in this situation. You've got a 22-point game, and you're dribbling out the clock, and you've got a guy that, something you really don't see, steals basketball, goes for layup. D'Souza, actually, one of the best blocks you've seen in a long time.
Yeah, it was pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, and then towers above him, gets the technical foul, and, you know, all hell breaks loose.
The only thing that kept it from being the malice in the palace is a wall. I mean, that fight immediately ended up right against that wall that was separating what I think are the students from the floor. I mean, if it had been like, you know, normal staggered courtside seating, they're up in the stands fighting. And then it really, really gets ugly because you already had random people outside of a uniform involved in the fight. I mean, you were going to have potentially, I guess those are students, I don't know, students or fans involved in it. And I mean, it was ugly enough, Lance, but boy, you start involving fans and a fan takes a shot to the face or something like that, and now you got lawsuits and things like that.
Well, with D'Souza putting a chair above the head, I mean, guy's going to be suspended for multiple games. And
this
is the guy that was the target of the NCAA investigation last year, had to sit out.
That's what I said. The easy thing would be to punt that guy off your team because he's been a disappointment to somewhat on the court.
He's only averaging 8 minutes a game.
Yeah,
he's doing nothing.
He has less than 3 points per game.
But it's hard to do that when he probably knows all your NCAA dirt.
Very true.
Yeah, I mean, they had to fight tooth and nail to get the guy eligible, and it was a surprise reading like some of the national guys, like our buddy Pat Forty. I didn't follow this that closely, but they say it was a pretty big surprise this guy even got eligibility this year. That was shocking. That was shocking to a lot of people.
So let's hear the reaction from the coaches. Bill Self up first. His team wins easily in a blowout. They're one of the better teams in the country. But suspensions are coming. Here's Bill Self of the Jayhawks.
But yeah, that was an embarrassment on our part for the role that we played in it. You know, there will be consequences that I'm sure I'll announce tomorrow. But I know that we were in the wrong. I'm not saying that both parties weren't in the wrong, but I know that we were in the wrong.
Now, Bruce Weber is the coach of Kansas State, and they've only got one conference win so far, and it was a good one. It was against West Virginia. Now, in this game, they got blown out, and he had said he was trying to tell his guys to back off late in the game, but they were playing hard, and they didn't want to back off. And then Bruce Weber afterwards is looking at it like I am, that nobody got, you know, pounded with a chair or nobody seriously hurt. But he's not as great behind the microphone as maybe Bill Self was in that situation. Here's Bruce Weber.
You know, it probably shouldn't happen. So, life lessons, that's what we talked to them about in the locker room. And good fortune, no one got hurt. And hopefully no major situation from it.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Life lesson, guys.
Boy, always painful to hear Bruce Weber speak. And a guy that had so much success at Illinois, played for a national championship. Here's one of the things. And, Brown, I know you're a guy that says, hey, look, you play, you know, a full 40 minutes, you play a full 60 minutes, whatever the game is. But DeJuan Gordon, in that situation, down 22, you don't steal the ball.
Well, I mean, that is the unwritten code, right?
Right.
But it is also very difficult, I think, to coach the play till the buzzer sounds, but don't play till the buzzer sounds in certain situations, right? I mean, that's a difficult thing to coach. I agree with you, Lance. The players got to know. We're down, what was it, 30?
You were down 22.
22. All I'm doing is padding my stat sheet. That's a selfish play by me. And it was, right? I mean, that is a 100% selfish play by him.
And you're instigating something.
Right. I mean, I don't know that that goes through your head, that I'm going to instigate something. But you know, on the other side, if you're gonna coach D'Souza to play 40 minutes, play to the buzzer sounds.
You don't coach anybody to stand over a guy.
You
like
don't.
That,
but do you coach him to run down and block that shot? Yes.
Yeah, no problem with that.
If he'd
have blocked the shot and walked away, nothing would happen.
No, not at all.
Because the kid down on the ground who got his shot blocked, he just lays there as the bodies start walking across him.
Yeah, I mean, he did. He'd already been embarrassed enough, Jim.
I mean, he's just laying on the ground. He's not getting up. So he didn't jump up and get into his face. The guy stands over him in a very selfish act. And here's me acting. And then all of a sudden, you've got a situation where Kansas State guy's coming to get him off of standing, straddled his player on the court. And I don't really blame that guy for trying to get him off of his guy.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, there's plenty of blame to go around. And I do, even though a lot of this lies at the feet of Bill Self, and a lot of people say he's running a rogue program right now, he at least took the blame. I didn't hear Weber take a ton of blame. Like Rockstar says, Weber's making it like life lessons from a fight.
Well, I don't understand how you can say, I understand. What I'm confused about is how you say you're instigating something. So you're saying, I know I'm down by 22 and I'm padding my stats, but I might not want to steal this ball because I might get my ass kicked.
No, I don't blame him.
No,
I don't.
You steal the ball and you do some kind of emphatic dunk. I mean,
but that's a selfish act.
It is, but I'm saying you don't want me to do that because it might instigate.
No. I don't think there's any reason that the guy that stole the ball should think this could lead to a fight. I mean, and there's really no reason, like Jim said, that D'Souza running down to make a hustle play and block the shot should lead to a fight.
No.
What led to the fight was D'Souza mugging him when he stood over him.
That's exactly what started the fight. And penalties will come down from this a little bit more. Here is Cut 4 Rockstar Bill Self talking about what we were just discussing, how selfish this was, and still an embarrassment for a program that has a team that could be good enough to be in the Final Four. Here's Bill Self.
We've seen things like this happen other places, and certainly it gets some attention. And you know it's the exception and not the rule, but still it's inexcusable. I mean, these things can't happen. This doesn't have anything to do with competition. Those were selfish motives on why it took place at the end.
Yeah, absolutely there. So you've seen brawls before, even in the college game, one of the more ones that made you want to watch that series more. Cincinnati and Xavier, you know, separated by just a few city blocks, and they play each other every year pre-conference, and they're never in the same conference. And they always have an intense rivalry, and they've had some fights over the years, one big, huge brawl in recent years.
And that was almost a decade ago, and, you know, it's one of those things that I take, and I think you agree with me, Brown. It's like Mick Cronin, the Cincinnati coach, came out really looking good. Chris Mack, the Xavier coach, who's now with Louisville, and Mick Cronin now with UCLA, came out looking the opposite.
It forever affected the way I view those two coaches.
Yeah,
it really
I agree
did
with you.
Because Cronin came out a little bit more, actually more emphatic than Bill Self, and took the blame. Talked about how what an embarrassment it was, yada, yada, and Chris Mack blew it off. He just blew it off, and it forever affected the way I viewed both those coaches.
One's got a Louisville program now that could be good enough to win a national championship, and the other one's at UCLA.
Won't make the tournament.
Still trying to find that glory.
And walking around the UCLA ruins like he's in Rome.
The best, you know, occasionally, like I, most of what I do on Twitter, I aim to either make myself laugh or make others laugh, right? I aim for humor a lot on there. Miss more than I hit. But the funniest one, the one I read, and I thought, God, I wish I'd have thought of that joke last night, was somebody tweeted, all that remains to be seen now is if D'Souza is suspended with pay or without pay.
Yeah, that's a great line.
It's really, really good.
Yeah, and playing it forward with Kansas State coming to town, it'll be interesting to see who gets suspended because everyone left the bench, obviously. It's the end of the game. I don't know how you take that into consideration because, hey, the buzzer sounded. I'm leaving the bench to go to the locker room. You know, who gets suspended? Does it impact this weekend's games? That'll be interesting. But Kansas State's here in Tuscaloosa to play Alabama. So that could be, in a roundabout way, very beneficial for an Alabama team that needs all the wins they can get as they continue to build that tournament resume.
The other dumb part of this, you just mentioned something there. It actually wasn't even the end of the game. For whatever reason, they put a second on the clock.
Oh, how stupid.
And if
that?
You're the Big 12, how do you do that? You've just had a massive brawl that you thank God it wasn't worse than it was, because you had one guy had a chair taken away from him and had a wall keeping them from a bigger crowd.
Yeah, you do not bring the guys back out on the
Why
floor.
Do you put a – I mean, it wasn't a minute. It wasn't 2 minutes. It was 1 second.
And
I mean,
it was a 22-point game.
In a 22-point game, why on earth you would put time back on that clock?
What was the line?
Well, and I don't think it didn't affect it at all. I mean, because
didn't affect the total. Total was 167.
Yeah, there was nothing.
Hey, but
K-State came back and shot some free throws. That was it.
You brought up, guys that might be suspended. Antonio Gordon and David Sloan were guys that actually went after De Sosa after the game, and those are guys that are averaging 17 and 19 minutes. So, guys in rotation.
Two big players. But if you're judging them, if you're the Big 12 and you're making that decision, or if you're Weber –
got to protect your guys.
If Bruce Weber doesn't sound like he's going to suspend anybody.
Yeah, I don't know.
But if you're the Big 12, do you suspend those guys?
Yeah, if they come off the bench, certainly.
Do you give them a rotating suspension where they're not all hit in one game?
Yeah, you got to stagger it.
No, I don't think you do.
Well, you have to.
No, I think you can. Well, I don't think
numbers
you can.
Numbers-wise.
Well, I don't think you do. I think you got to send a message.
Auburn coach Gus Malzahn down at the Senior Bowl in Mobile yesterday, seeing all the Auburn players that were playing in the game down there. It's the annual trip for the Auburn coach down there, and he always does a media scrum with all the gathered media there on the practice field in Mobile. And, of course, one of the questions came up about the role for Chad Morris moving into 2020, and here is what the Auburn coach said about turning everything over to him.
Of course, Chad Morris, in my opinion, is one of the best offensive minds in all of college football, and we're going to turn him loose. I'm very excited that he's a part. I trust him 110%, and he's going to take our offense. He's going to run with it, and I'm very excited about that. And something that me and him have been talking about for a long time, being two high school coaches way back when, and we finally get a chance to coach with each other, and I'm excited that he's going to be in charge of our offense, and really looking forward to next year.
Will he have full control?
Yeah, he's going to do it. I mean, you don't hire a guy like Chad Morris unless you're going to do that. And so very excited that he's a part and run our offense at Auburn.
He's going to call plays is the indication that that's what will happen there.
Well, I mean, if he's got full control, that to me says he's calling plays, which is what Brandon Marcello reported quite a while ago, actually, down on the Auburn beat. And it answered a question I think a lot of people wanted to know. Look, Lance, I mean, we said this a lot. If you're Chad Morris, you've been offensive coordinator at Clemson, head coach at SMU, head coach at Arkansas, you're probably not going to take a job where you can't call plays, right?
Yeah, the only thing that is surprising to me, I agree with Gus Malzahn, you don't hire a guy like Chad Morris unless you're going to let him call plays. But again, just last July,
I know,
Gus Malzahn on this station said it was a mistake me turning over the play calling duties.
Yep. I'm taking back control. It's where I'm most comfortable. And he said that a number of times.
And he took back control with a true freshman quarterback, and yep, the numbers went up. I mean, they weren't great. The offense was stagnant a lot of times. It wasn't fluid, but, the numbers were better.
Just the timeline. Gus Malzahn takes over as coach at Auburn. They go to the national championship game. Should have won the thing with one defensive stop. Couldn't get it. But Gus Malzahn is cruising along. When the offense started to struggle, he let Rhett Lashley start calling plays.
Correct.
And then Lashley leaves. They bring in an outside guy in Chip Lindsey. Chip Lindsey calls the plays. That never seemed to mesh together. There never just seemed to be any chemistry in the offense at all. Gus takes it back over. Everyone cheers, and now Gus lets it go, and here's Chad Morris in. But Chad's got a great reputation as an offensive coordinator dating back to sort of jump-starting this Clemson run.
Well, it's kind of tough with Chad Morris, too, because one thing that jumps out in that soundbite is Gus Malzahn, I don't have the direct quote here, but called him one of the best offensive minds in football, I think. And I think Chad Morris was viewed as that coming out of Clemson. Now, you look at the totality of what he's done, and you say, okay, well, yeah, he was really good at Clemson. He was calling an offense with Clemson players, which helps. He went to SMU. I don't know how you would label him as an offensive mind at SMU, Lance.
I thought it was okay,
yeah,
but
good.
I mean, since then, I think you could say maybe more improvement with Sonny Dykes right now.
Right. You go to Arkansas, and nobody's going to view him as a great offensive mind at Arkansas. It was terrible. But there again, you're playing with a hand that is dealt to you of probably the worst roster in the Southeastern Conference, one of the worst rosters in the Southeastern Conference, and you're going up against the West, which is loaded. So I guess you got to grade him on a scale for those other two stops.
The only thing I would question with Chad Morris is his decision-making on jobs to take. How you go from Clemson's offensive coordinator and being a guy that was on a lot of short lists to taking the SMU job.
Right.
And then taking an Arkansas job that didn't equate to any SEC wins, and now you go take a job as the offensive coordinator at Auburn.
But here's the problem for whomever's calling plays, and I'm not saying Gus is passing this off to Chad while they rebuild the offensive line, and then I'm going to take it back over once we take a bump or two this year. But you get Bo Nix back. You've got a ton of running backs to where probably eventually somebody's going to hit the transfer portal because you just can't play them all. You got Booby Whitlow, you got DJ Williams, you've got a guy who you even move at tight end some, H-back, Harold Joyner, Tank Bigsby's coming in. You got Sean Shivers back there.
Yeah, numbers don't work.
Yeah, there's so many back there. The receivers, you got some talent coming back in Seth Williams and Anthony Schwartz and Eli Stove. But on that offensive line, Nick Broms, and that's it. Everyone else, you're bringing those younger guys up who have been waiting their time and some recruits that are coming in. And you flip it around on the defense, and you get Big Cat Bryant's back, Tyrone Truesdale's back. You've got a good linebacking core. You got some holes at the corners that you got to replace. There's some rebuilding to do this year for Auburn. There's some offensive parts there, but when you look at the rebuild on the offensive line, that's going to be probably what dictates the success of this season.
Yeah, because, you know, running back, I think we've seen enough to know that if there is an elite SEC runner, or maybe not even elite, if there is a legitimate SEC running back already on that roster, it's DJ Williams, and he's probably the only one. So, you know, Gus Malzahn traditionally has been hesitant to trust freshmen in that situation. Can Tank Bigsby be one of those guys as well? I don't know. So I do think there is a question mark at running back. You know you've got a potentially elite receiver in Seth Williams. You know you've got a quarterback that has took some big steps forward this year, but offensive line's the huge question. And I think, you know, they've recruited at least some talented receivers. Again, that you got to trust some freshmen to get out there. So I think you can have some talented guys at the skill positions. I don't know what to expect out of that offensive line. And now you've changed offensive line coaches, too.
One thing you know is he's got more talent than he had at Arkansas.
There's no doubt.
He has just more talent in the young freshman receivers coming in Hudson and Tennyson and Evans and Capers and those guys that are coming in. He's got more talent just in those guys. Forget Seth and Swartz and Eli Stove. The question is Bo Nix always going to be on the run?
Yeah, well, and yeah, that's a good
running
question
for his life.
But the good news is you do have a quarterback in Bo Nix that's got a lot of experience now.
Yeah, he's pretty good at on the run. He takes over, and that gets us to a Cowan equipment poll question with Chad Morris taking over at offense. And it's a pretty simple question that we always throw out there for you. We try to keep them simple. Gus Malzahn's turning the Auburn offense over to Chad Morris. What are the expectations? They were 64th in the nation last year, Brownie tells me. So here's your choices. Great improvement. Auburn's offense moves to the top 10. Some improvement. They move into the top 30. Same as Gus calling plays, or drop off and Gus will return. Those are your four choices, and it's brought to you by Cowan Equipment.
Every single day, the Roundtable Poll Question, built with Cowan Equipment Company, your authorized Takauchi Compact Equipment dealer. Winner is here. Give your equipment the attention it's been needing with the scheduled maintenance from their service team at any of their 8 branches. Proudly serving Alabama contractors since 1938. For more information, Cowan.com.
Just to give you some reference, 64th in the nation. Now, that's a total offense ranking, which is yards per game. But 64th in the nation puts you in the neighborhood of TCU at 62, Southern Miss at 63, UCLA at 65, Kent State at 66. That's the neighborhood Auburn's offense was living in last year, which is not enough. Now, interestingly, Georgia was 61st.
Yeah.
Well, that's really not surprising.
So if somebody bought your company for $2 billion, would you worry about turning in a nice, expensive steak dinner on the expenses? They probably just look, oh, okay, no big deal, right?
I mean, $2 billion is a lot of money.
It is. $2 billion is a ton of money.
I mean, your cheapest NFL franchise you couldn't get for $2 billion now,
no.
Could you? I don't know what the cheapest NFL franchise would be. I guess Cincinnati.
Wait, $2 billion?
Can't yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Cheapest NFL franchise?
No, because now you've got, you know, Clippers, Lakers. You've got NBA franchises worth $2 billion.
I couldn't fill up these two suitcases I have right here with $2 billion and walking in cash.
Those are some large
suitcases. And hand them to that guy who wants to move the Jaguars to London. And he wouldn't.
I don't even know how much $2 billion would be in pounds. I think $1 million in pounds is more than you.
You don't mean like pounds English currency. You mean actual weight.
Lunsford says the Bills are $1.9 billion.
Okay, there you go. So you could barely get the cheapest franchise for $2 billion. And would you really want to own the Bills? Like, if you're going to buy an NFL franchise.
Yeah, I'd want to own the Bills.
Why? It's so cold up there.
1.9. Well, I'd be sitting in the owner's box. I don't care how cold. Let them eat cake.
Thank you, Marie. I can't imagine spending that kind of money and owning the Bills. With all due respect to the Bills.
Well, that's not bad. So if you did $100 bills, right, how much do you think $1 million weighs?
I'd say $1 million and $100 bills weighs
1 ton.
16 pounds.
22 pounds.
What? One ton? Dunaway, that's 2,000 pounds.
Not gold bars.
How much does it weigh?
That's 22 pounds.
22 pounds. Oh, you can carry that.
Yeah, I carry a lot of it. I'd be dragging it.
Every day of my life, if I could.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and tell you, 22 pounds, that's what I throw in a bar every day. That's my bench press.
Could you imagine walking around every single day with $1 million cash? How quick would you blow through it? Because I think people say you spend cash slower than you spend card. Like debit card versus cash.
There's a visibility to it.
But I feel like,
I don't know if that's true.
I don't think it is. I feel like I'm a freer spender with cash than I am on my debit card. That's the way I feel. I don't have, like, mathematics to back
with
it up.
Actual hard cash?
Yeah, oh, with actual cash, I feel like I'm a freer spender with cash than I am on my debit card.
Yeah, like, I tipped Damien a 20 yesterday for just doing the podcast. I was like, here, just take this. That was a great job on the podcast.
Wow.
Tipped him out, huh?
Cool. Tipped him out when I was leaving. I did not, by the way. If you're looking for that 20 in your pocket.
You just said, I don't think Damien was here.
Time and money, both something we like saving, so why waste them on substandard HVAC system when you can have America's most reliable brand, Trane. Plus, you'll save on your utility bill, giving you more money for the things you really want. It's hard to stop a Trane. Don't forget the Trane Unstoppable Player. We've got it every single Monday, so be watching as you watch your sports throughout this week and the weekend for a Trane Unstoppable Player.
Joe Burrow was unstoppable throughout the college football season, so we've created the Burrow Award. We will throw out some candidates here of guys you think can make a draft. Nobody will ever go from what Joe Burrow was to what Joe Burrow is this year or was this year from his junior to senior year at LSU. I don't think we'll ever see that again. But who stands to make the biggest improvement, a Burrow-like improvement from last year to this year in college football? First name on your list that you throw out, Lance, is?
I'm going to Wisconsin, Jack Cohn.
I thought about Jack Cohn instantly.
You know, Jack Cohn is maybe the best quarterback I've seen under Paul Chryst, and it was his first year as a starting quarterback, 18 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, completed 70% of his passes. But now Cephas, your number one receiver, is onto the NFL. Jonathan Taylor was, you know, the focus of that offense. I think Cohn will come back. He'll be better than ever, and I think the numbers go up.
He doesn't get asked to throw a lot, obviously, but
maybe more so maybe now. More so now.
Yeah, I mean, you always feel like they're going to have a good running back, right?
Burrow Award in college football. Give me a nominee, Brownie.
I went away from quarterback. Quarterback is the easy place to do this, obviously, but I tried to dig deep and find somebody that's not a quarterback, so it doesn't stand out as much. But this guy was 13th in the SEC in receiving yards per game this year. And I think when the season's over, he'll be much higher than that. And that's George Pickens at Georgia. The freshman wide receiver didn't have bad numbers, especially for a freshman. 727 receiving yards, 8 touchdowns, 51.9 yards per game. And I don't know what Jamie Newman is going to be. I feel like people are overvaluing Jamie Newman right now.
The reaction to our top 5 SEC quarterback rankings that we did on Monday from Georgia fans and others were that we had Jamie Newman too low.
Yeah.
That we had him third, or we didn't put him in our poll part of the question of our top 4. People said, man, I can't believe you're leaving Jamie Newman off.
But, and I don't know what he's going to be. I'm kind of waiting to see, Lance, on Jamie Newman. You were kind of high.
I like
on
him a lot, but, you know, is it more Shea Patterson from Ole Miss to Michigan where it was kind of underwhelming? or is it Russell Wilson from NC State to Wisconsin?
But I don't think he's going to finish the season the way Jake Fromm did, where Fromm couldn't get over 50% passing. I think Newman's got to be better than that. He may not be a better quarterback than Fromm. I just think George Pickens will take a big step forward in year two in that offense.
Well, you guys have left me a couple on the table in the SEC to throw out for my first one. So I will go with an obvious one if he's the quarterback, and that's Garrett Schrader. If he somehow wins the job in Starkville and continues there and Mike Leach develops him into a passer.
Yeah, I just don't know if he can throw the football.
I don't either. So it'd be easy to put whoever the Mississippi State quarterback is here. But if it's Garrett Schrader, what he was last year to what he could be this upcoming year could be Burrow-esque. So I'll throw Schrader out there. Give me another one.
I'm going to go another quarterback, ACC. You saw Scott Satterfield, and you saw the improvement with this Louisville team in year one. Mecale Cunningham, the sophomore quarterback, 14 touchdowns, 3 interceptions over his last 5 games. He got better and better as the season went on. And I really expect a huge jump from year one to year two under Satterfield. Watch out for Cunningham. He's going to be really good.
Brown, do you have another?
You know, we've gotten some Bo Nix on Twitter.
Oh, I wasn't going to let this segment end without Bo Nix.
So let's get to him now. I don't know that I would – I mean, Burrow is a big jump. I don't know that you're going to get the sizable jump from Bo Nix that you got from Burrow.
Here's the interesting thing, though, Brown. You go back and you look at Burrow's numbers in 2018.
Right.
They're identical to Bo Nix's numbers this year.
That's interesting. I had not done that.
Identical.
What are the odds Bo Nix's numbers in 2020 are identical to Burrow's in 2019?
I'm going to go. Dunaway loves this. I'm going to go 0 chance.
And that's the jump I'm talking about. He's not going to make that jump, right?
Yeah, but nobody maybe does that again. What would a jump look like just to win this award? What does Bo Nix have to do to jump from where he was, right? Joe Burrow S, to what to impress the heck
out of
you.
All right, so Bo Nix completed 57% of his passes.
You got to take that up to 65.
I was going
to
say 65.
I was going to say 67. Okay.
Okay, we're close enough. So 2,542 pass yards.
3,200 yards.
Yeah. All right, so 700 more yards. It's doable.
Yeah.
16 touchdowns, 6 picks. I'd like to see that be somewhere in the neighborhood of
25 and keep the 6.
25 and 6 is exactly what I was going to say. And he threw for 195 yards per game. So if you guys increase him 700 yards, that's going to go up to what, about 220 a game or so? 215 a game? I'm not good at the quick math. I'd kind of like to see that a little bit higher.
I'd like to see him about 270 a game.
Yeah, like Trask was at 245 a game. That was second behind Burrow. Kellen Mond was at 222 a game.
Trask is the guy we projected at number one.
Yeah,
our little projections the other day.
I mean, if you want to look back at the year before, Tamu was at 326, but led the conference. But Locke was at 269, Tagovailoa at 264, Bentley at 264, Shermer at 240. I mean, even Jarrett Stidham was at 214. So if you could get up to there, I mean, I think those are reasonable numbers for X. If he went above those, then he might be a Burrow Award winner.
Chad Moore is calling the plays now. Ken is with us on the phone. Can you throw one into the mix, Ken?
You know, I really don't have one to throw in the mix, but I got a question to ask you about your award. How much did Quinnen Williams improve his draft?
Oh, a ton. Quinnen Williams, he would have had the award before we called it the Burrow Award. It would have been the Quinnen Williams Award.
That's why I felt.
Yeah.
So do you think you could do a Quinnen Williams award? You know, do maybe linemen?
Well, that's true. We could expand this. Yeah, we could defensive lineman.
Yeah, not everything in life can be, you know, always Alabama and Auburn. So we went with the most obvious with the Burrow Award, but we can do a lineman with Quinnen Williams. Thanks, Ken.
Ed Orgeron Award, couldn't we?
We could, yeah. I don't think we're ever going to see that again either.
Yeah. According to IMDb, 32 Godzilla movies all time.
My goodness.
Can't keep a good man down.
Sushi joint downtown that shows one on loop.
Godzilla 1954. Godzilla Raids Again, 1955. I won't read them all. That's how they all got started. King Kong versus Godzilla.
So Godzilla's got an anger issue, right? And he can breathe fire.
Yeah, we turned into a good guy on the who are you pulling for, him or King Kong? I don't know which one's
the
good guy.
Who would be the worst coach that could breathe fire like Godzilla?
Bob Huggins?
Oh, Bob Huggins would be bad. Brian Kelly?
Oh, yeah, he looks like he is breathing fire.
Through 1975, they had done 15 Godzillas, but apparently had burned out. So they went 10 whole years until Godzilla 1985 came back in 85.
We got to reset the storylines, boys.
Yeah, see, if he didn't have the flame, though, King Kong is your obvious favorite because of the athleticism.
Yeah, I think King Kong has better strength.
They could kill him in a push-up competition.
Strength, agility. Quick off the ball.
Yes. I mean,
big upside for that guy.
I think there's too many factors when it comes to that for King Kong. Too much upside.
If you're a small business owner in Alabama, consider Bryant Bank for your business banking needs. Bryant Bankers are collaborative partners that work to empower your potential. They care because Alabama is their home, too. Member FDIC, we should one day on the show try to determine who is the apex predator of all movie characters of all time.
You know, I brought up the Godzilla right at this moment because I wanted Lunsford to say something about it. He's in here with us now. He didn't say anything about it.
I'm just laughing at Joel instead.
We don't know what we're talking about.
My buddy Brian Groeschel says the one Jeter nay vote came from the writer in a little known publication called Mariano's Musings.
We had no idea. Yeah. It would be the only one.
Way to go. All right, Lunsford, you're not a baseball guy, are you? You don't love baseball.
I am not a baseball fan.
Yeah,
no.
You're a younger generation, so you could care less about Jeter?
I can respect Jeter, what he did. But no, I never got into watching the Yankees when they were successful. Never cared about him, A-Rod, any of the players that came through there. I don't know. Just not a baseball
person. It's so hard for a Yankee today to make an impact as far as an immortal Yankee based on the history.
Right.
But Derek Jeter is one of those guys that you really can make an argument. He could be on the Mount Rushmore of Yankees.
I mean, he's the greatest shortstop in their history.
Do you guys think this scandal now in Major League Baseball over stealing signs will hurt Jose Altuve's chances of being in the Hall of Fame?
It will.
Like Bonds and the steroids and Pete Rose and the gambling has?
You know, I heard Pete Rose on Lebatard yesterday.
I did, too. It was a fascinating
interview.
It was
a really good interview, wasn't it?
Yeah. I thought about replaying it almost in its entirety today.
Yeah, it was that good. He does point out that, these guess hitters and to take the guesswork out of it.
Yeah. He says you're guessing between three pitches and you're going to be right – one out of three times. You got a 1 in 3 chance of being right. When they're banging the garbage can, you know what pitch is coming. How easy it
You're
is.
You're not a guess hitter anymore.
Right.
Yeah, you know what pitch is coming. All right. So I appreciate Buzz for the question about Altuve's Hall of Fame status.
His comment on Edgar Martinez was the funniest, though.
Yeah.
To laugh out loud. He's like, he didn't even own a glove and he made the Hall of Fame.
That's true. That's a great point.
And he went on a rant. He says, how can you even call yourself a baseball player if you don't own a glove?
Yeah.
All right, Lunsford's got four downs. He's being very quiet today, so read the sponsorship.
Four locations for you: Gardendale, Hoover, Moody, Trustful. Hunting season in full effect. The guys at Vulcan do tires for ATVs and trailers. Get set up at one of those great locations or go online today. Go to VulcanTireAndAuto.com.
First down.
All right, had a Jeter question here. I'll move it to first down since we were just talking about it. So now he's in. Larry Walker also got in this year in his final year. I was looking ahead to the classes coming up, 2022, so not the next class, but the one after that. Who makes it in from this on this year? First year on the ballot, Alex Rodriguez, David Ortiz, Mark Teixeira, Jimmy Rollins, Joe Nathan, Jonathan Papelbon. Last year on the ballot, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Curt Schilling, Sammy Sosa.
Because I was reading about this earlier today, you got a bunch of guys that are in their first year or last year that are tied to the steroid scandal.
Yep.
And those guys historically have not been able to get in, but that is a ballot loaded with obvious Hall of Famers aside from the fact that people think they cheated.
Yeah, Alex Rodriguez should be a first ballot guy.
But he won't be.
But he won't be based on the history. Yep. David Ortiz will be a first ballot guy, and I don't believe he should be.
Yeah, you're probably right. And that'll be, like Lunsford pointed out, the last year on the ballot for Bonds and Clemens, who made up no ground this year. Like, their voting total stayed about the same. So a lot of people are thinking they've hit their ceiling now.
And that was another point that Pete Rose made yesterday. Hey, look, these guys played great baseball their entire career. I don't care about the steroids. And I totally agree with that.
I do,
if
too.
If you don't have Bonds and Clemens in the Hall of Fame, it's just not a Hall of Fame.
That's why I don't like baseball, because I grew up, my prime childhood teenage years was
steroids.
The home run battles, steroids, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa.
And none of us
Barry
care.
Bonds.
Yeah. We were the consumers. We really don't care.
I do not care one lick. And so without them ever being really a part of baseball moving forward, because their time's going to come and go, I don't care.
And Rose himself, who did not use steroids, and could his records could be impacted as much as anybody else. He said, steroids or not, they still had to hit the ball, and they had to hit the ball to where the other team was not.
Right.
I don't care about what P. Rose did either.
Yeah, me either.
Second down.
I didn't have any money on baseball back then, so I don't care.
I didn't either. All right, moving into college football, a lot of coaching changes in the state of Mississippi. The most recent one, former Mississippi State coach Joe Moorhead, now the OC at Oregon. So I'll ask you this, coaches coming in and going out: Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Georgia with Matt Luke being there, Oregon now with Joe Moorhead being there. Which one of those four offenses is the best next year? Which one has the best total offense next year? Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Georgia, Oregon.
I will go Oregon.
Too.
Oregon's changing quarterback, man.
They are changing
quarterback. I'd like to know that situation. Are we not believing that Mike Leach is just going to bring his system in and make some quarterback look like
a... Yeah, but it's in the SEC.
I know. That's what I'm doing. So we don't believe it then.
Ole Miss, the clear leader of these four last year.
Yeah, but Tyler Shough, the quarterback coming in, he did get some reps behind Justin Herbert. You've still got weapons there. I think Moorhead's a really good OC. It's in the Pac-12.
Yeah, I'll go Oregon.
I'm going to go Georgia.
Ooh. Nobody picked Ole Miss. They were number one last year out of all four of those teams.
They just don't have a passing quarterback.
Lane Kiffin will overthink it.
Third down.
All right, shifting into basketball. Saw this debate on Reddit. The three-point line has been moved back, and has been moved back about a foot, a little over a foot this year, almost a foot and a half, really, to over 22 feet back, not quite as far as the NBA line. But the NCAA has its lowest three-point success rate in 25 years this season so far. Is the game of basketball better or worse because teams are shooting more threes, but they're missing more threes as well?
That makes it worse. And I think it's a dumb move by the NCAA, knowing that the trend in basketball now is to shoot more threes. Why would you create more missed shots? People don't want to tune in to see that.
Yeah, I think 19-9 was perfect.
Yeah.
And, you know, 19-9, so I mean, teams are shooting around 38 to 40%. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
that may be a little high. I think players will adjust to the step back. Auburn players would tell you that line probably mispainted in Tuscaloosa and Gainesville last week, a little deeper than right. it seemed. But I would say that, you know, Nate Oates and those type of coaches, their teams will adjust. And, you know, Bruce Pearl, they like to shoot three. They'll adjust to the new line eventually.
Fourth down.
0-25 from Vandy was fun to
watch. That was pretty bad.
All right, I don't know if you've heard yet, Zion Williamson making his debut tonight. You know who that is?
Yes.
Anyway, making his debut for the Pelicans as they take on the Spurs. Only 3.5 games behind the Grizzlies, who have surged up to eighth place with Ja Morant. I know a lot of people are debating who's better between those two, who could potentially win Rookie of the Year. I think Ja has it right now. But I'll ask this question. In that division, you have Dallas, you have Houston, you have San Antonio, Memphis, and New Orleans. Who has the better overall success between the newcomers in that league, Zion, Ja Morant, or Luka Doncic?
I'm going to go Doncic. Yeah. He's the best of the three players.
Overall success, not just this year.
Yeah.
Luka will be the international face of the league at one point.
Yeah, he should be.
Yeah.
There's a chance he's the best of the three players. Morant has been way better than I ever thought he would. There's a guy that tweets us that said, I laughed when he said he could be the next Allen Iverson. I don't remember it, but I'll take that L. I must have laughed, and I was wrong.
Barring injury, especially for Zion, all three are can't-miss guys, but Doncic is already there. He's playing like an MVP.
Stud.
He's 20.
That's Four Downs brought to you by Vulcan Tires.
Four great locations, Gordondale, Hoover, Moody, Trustful. Stop by, get service bumper to bumper. Any of those great four locations are online, VulcanTireAndAuto.com.
Interact with us on Twitter, @JocksRoundtable.